Jim, one of my favorite lines from the book was how you actually close it. And you say, if you have a dream, you must try it. You won't get another chance to get it out of your system.
Why not try it? If you don't try it, you'll never know, and you may live the rest of your life regretting that you never tried whatever it is. The worst that can happen is you'll fail. But that's not the end of the world, and you will probably learn something from your failures. So whatever your dreams are, especially if they're absurd, try it, do it. You know, and at least for the rest of your life, you won't regret that I never tried. Please, please, especially if they're absurd dreams, please try them.
Jim Rogers, author, adventurer, and investor. Welcome to The Competent Man. Thanks for joining me, sir.
I am delighted to be here, Tom. I'm delighted.
Well, I will say the pleasure is all mine, Jim. I was explaining to you in the before we hit record here today that I've followed your work for a long time and always knew you were a bit of an adventurer, or as your book says, the Indiana Jones of the investing world. But once I read Investment Biker, I realized how much you and I had in common, and I'm delighted to be able to have this conversation today.
I am flattered. I am honored to be here. I'm certainly delighted to be here. I'm
So
in over my head, I'm sure.
I don't know about that, but the motto of Competent Man is to learn from the best to become better. So hopefully I can learn something from you today and share that with the audience.
And I hope I can become competent.
So, Jim, you are the holder of two different Guinness Book World Records, and one of those being the most countries visited in a continuous journey by car at 116 countries. You've basically circumnavigated the globe first by motorcycle, which I think is almost a more impressive feat in my mind, and then by car. Which one do you think was preferable to you?
Oh my gosh, what a good question. What an insightful question. I, of course, am not competent enough to give you an answer. They were both wonderful. I loved motorcycles. I still do. It was great to see the world on a motorcycle. That's a very, very good way to see it. As you know, you're right out there in it. You see everything, you feel everything, and it's great. A car has advantages too. You can stop and take a nap. You can do whatever many things in the car. So they were both great. If I were doing it again, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah,
I would like to do it again is probably the best answer.
if well, I don't think that most people get that difference. The because you would think, or most people's inclination would be that traveling by motorcycle would be very similar to traveling by car. But what do you think the biggest differences are?
Well, no. When you're on a motorcycle, you're right out there in it, Tom. You feel it, you taste it. It's you're part of the world. You're part of where you are. Cars are great for many, many reasons. You can stop and take a nap. You can do whatever you want. You can look things up. No, there are great differences in cars and motorcycles, but as far as I'm concerned, they were both great. Motorcycle was my first love because I could really be totally in the environment, and it's a thrill riding a motorcycle. But cars have their advantages too. So if I were doing it again, I don't know. I guess the main answer to you is I would like to do it again somehow.
Well, I certainly, I've traveled many, many miles, not as many as you by motorcycle. I've traveled across Africa. I've traveled across Mexico several different times, different ways. I've traveled all over the world. And I think one of the biggest things that motorcycling gives you as well as not only being in the elements, which can sometimes be a real negative thing, as you explain getting caught in a really crazy hailstorm in Russia, but just being alone with your thoughts and not having the distraction, or not having the ability to have the distraction of fiddling with things in the car and, listening to music more readily. I just find it's a more, almost more of a meditative experience. And, as you're going through the, again, basically the entire world, you were probably some of the first people that had ever ridden basically across all of China and Russia at that point. It had the Soviet Union was just barely opening up, and you had to delay the beginning of your trip to be able to get permission in order to be able to even cross it. So do you think, for again, a little bit of context for the readers, you basically retired at 37 from being a very successful investor as well as a professor. But do you think that the trip ended up making you a better investor?
Well, of course it does. If you're going to be an investor, the more you know, the better. And when I say the more you know about the world, about yourself, it'll help you a great deal. So, no, of course. I mean, driving across Siberia on a motorcycle is educational in many, many ways. So it had to help me. It had to help me. I'm sure it did. And I'm glad I did it. It was a lot of fun. I'm sure someday my children will say, "Oh, why did you spend so much time on adventure? You could have made us more money." But no, that was not my ambition in life.
It's in those lessons that you learned. It's so interesting that you basically got an economics lesson everywhere you went, right? You in the book, you say that, governments can control supply and price of commodities, but they can't do both of those for very long. So what do you think are some of the, let's say, the most important economics lessons that maybe stand out to you that you learned along your way?
I guess the main lesson is a life lesson. Governments usually get it wrong. People who go to work for the government probably work for the government because they can't get a real job. So they work for the government. But the people who work for the government think that they have an enormous amount of power, which they like to exercise, and they do. They think that they're smarter than all of us, because they work for the government and they certainly have a lot of power. But it's certainly my experience that most people working for the government don't get it right. Now, I'm sure there are plenty of, I know there are plenty of smart people working for governments all over the world. But if you have a government job, it might be because you can't get a real job.
Do you think that taking personal responsibility for, let's say, being an investor or a speculator versus getting a government job is, let's say, one of the main lines of demarcation between the two?
Well, if you're an investor, you know every minute, every hour, whether you've made the right decision or not. The market's pretty cruel. The market doesn't care. The market lets you know whether you are right or wrong. And if you're in the government, there's no quite feedback quite like that, certainly not quickly and instantaneously. And even if there is, you can make it up. You can cover it. You can try to cover it anyway, and you can cover it for a while. There's no way to do that in the market. The market's very cruel. The market's a cruel taskmaster, which is one of the beautiful and great things about the market, of course. That's one reason it's so exciting. And so, I mean, I prefer the market, but what do I know?
Well, I mean, you write in the book that as a speculator, you've often been early. And you write in the book actually that you would be short the US at that point, which would have been in, I would expect that would be somewhere in the mid-90s. What do you think has been able to kick that can down the road so far since then?
Well, the market, the US, when I was a kid And for many decades, the U.S. was a creditor nation. We had lots of assets, and the world owed us money. Then the U.S. changed and became a debtor nation, and is now the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. But if you're a government like that, especially a big government, you can print money, you can borrow money, you can keep things going for a long time, artificially. But I mean, most people don't care. They think things are great. They look out the window, they think, oh, this is great, everything is fine. But it's all based on borrowed money. And I've read enough and been around long enough to know that borrowed money is fine, but eventually somebody has to pay the piper.
Jim, what do you think gave you the feeling of being able to invest in a country? In the book you mentioned that when you got to Istanbul, you couldn't find a reason to invest there.
Well, in simple terms, if you can find a place that is cheap and is changing, it's a good, usually a good place to invest, because change, if there's change for the better, and often it is for the better, because people know that they've got problems, and if they're changing for the better, it usually leads to great opportunities. Doesn't matter what the country is. People will say, oh, I never invest in that country. That's a bad attitude, because anything can be an opportunity if it's changing for the better.
Do you think there's
Cheap and change. Remember, cheap and change.
think there's a particular religion or let's say system of living that produces the kindest people, the best crops or the best way of living in your experience?
Well, in my experience, the best method is to let people do what they want. The expression free market has a lot of legitimacy, because if everybody does what they want, they're usually trying to make things better. And yes, of course, there'll be many, many, many mistakes, but the act of trying, and the act of trying to change and make things better, usually leads to good opportunities. Don't worry, there'll be plenty of mistakes. We all make plenty of mistakes. We're human beings. But the attempt to make things better usually leads to opportunities.
So I guess in short, it's either the free market or capitalism seems to be after literally traveling the world, seeing socialism, communism, all these different systems, that would be a good way of kind of summarizing it, right?
Well, yes, I've been to many socialist countries, communist countries, and everybody thinks that they're smarter than the market. They think they're smarter than everybody else. But I have learned that whether we like it or not, the market is smarter than we are. Market makes mistakes, but we make more mistakes.
Jim, what about China when you were there gave you the feeling that 2 decades from your trip that they will be the best capitalists in the world?
Well, when I went to Red China, Communist China, I was terrified. I had listened to American propaganda all my life that the Red Chinese were evil, vicious, dangerous people. So I was terrified when I got there. I assumed I would be shot any minute. But it didn't take me long to realize that these people were extremely hardworking, extremely ambitious, and they wanted better things for themselves and their children. And then I did more history, learned more, and realized that for many centuries, the Chinese have been very competent. They've had disasters, repeated disasters. But I learned that China's probably the only country in world history that's been on top 3 or 4 times. Rome was great once, Egypt was great once, England was great once, But China's been on top three or four times. I have not figured out why. After they've get on top, they collapse. But then after a few centuries or decades, they rise to the top again. I don't know why, but I know they've done it more than once. And whether we like it or not, China is an important country and always has, often has been.
It's interesting to be able to kind of contrast how the Chinese were treating basically the same patch of land. You really, again, you saw this very starkly, how the Chinese were able to change the same countryside into a garden versus Russia was basically turning it into garbage along the Aral Sea. Is that another, stark example of capitalism versus basically an oppressive system that makes everybody not necessarily do their best?
Well, I will repeat that for whatever reason, capitalism has many problems, but it also usually winds up leading to great successes. I don't remember great communist countries that have had repeated, continuous great successes. I can name, we all can, many capitalist countries that have done that. I mean, at least in my reading of history and of experience, capitalism has been a better system than socialism or communism. I wish it were that easy. Oh my gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful? But well, I guess it is that easy. I realize that capitalism, in the end, is better for all of us.
Well, it's kind of funny to think about the, let's say, the cyclical nature of history and what it teaches us. Do you have any hope that humanity ever learns that lesson and really starts to trend in the direction of not making those same mistakes? Or do you think that that's just a, an innate thing that we have to do?
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if we all could just read a book or watch a TV or something and get all the answers? That'd be a wonderful, wonderful, simple way. But we're all human beings. We all get greedy. We all get excited. We all get overenthusiastic at the wrong time. Whether we like it or not, we're human beings, and human beings make many mistakes, and often the same mistakes that have been made often, been made many times in history. But the main lesson of history is we don't learn the lessons of history. History is all there for us to read and understand, but we can read it and say, oh, it's different now. Don't worry. We'll change it. It'll be okay this time. It's different this time. When you hear the words, it's different this time, be extremely careful and worried.
Jim, what do you think that Rhodes and Kashmir teach you about thinking like an investor?
Well, I mean, I'm not the first to understand that infrastructure can lead to opportunities for everybody, whatever the infrastructure is, whether it's ports or railroads or whatever, highways, restaurants, and the more infrastructure there is, the more opportunity there will be for everybody. I mean, you can go to a country where there's only desert. Yes, there's opportunity, but it's more complicated and difficult. But if you go to a country that's got nice highways and restaurants and hotels, it's a lot easier than if you have to figure out how to get across the desert. It can be done, of course, but it's a lot easier if all you have to do is drive up to the Hilton and check in and order yourself hot coffee, cold beer, whatever you want.
What would basically the black market currency exchange rate versus the bank exchange rate and the difference between the two tell you about a country and how it treats its currency?
Well, right away, if there is a black market, that's an important indicator. That's an important lesson, because if there's a black market, that means something is wrong somewhere, because that's why the black markets develop. And the black market usually has a more legitimate in the sense of a proper exchange rate or a currency, for example. The fact that the black market exists teaches you a lot, and it will also teach you a lot about the economy of that country, that whatever, wherever you are, because the black market is often a better rate, a more legitimate in the sense of the proper rate than set by bureaucrats and the central bank. I mean, the central bank is out for themselves. The black market's out for themselves too, but they usually have to base it on a more legitimate rate. The government can enforce an exchange rate. The black market has to take what everybody else will accept.
So the bigger the difference between the two, the more capital controls and the more control in general that the government typically has over that currency, right?
Well, yes, I mean the government has guns. The government can, whether you like it or not, the government can tell you what to do, and you pretty much have to do it, or most people have to do it. I'm not suggesting that's the best way, but the government has the guns. The market just has facts.
You know, it's interesting to, again, just get that time capsule or that snapshot in time of where the world was. You were going through Japan, kind of in the middle of the stock market bubble, and it did remind me of much of the West at this point. You know, pain points show a fall is coming. And how do you think these, let's say, people's attitudes are, or do you think people's attitudes are quite similar, let's say, in Japan, where they only knew a bull market at that time when you were there, versus much of the, let's say, just say the US right now, where many investors and Wall Street figures only know a bull market?
Well, I mean, we all are creatures of our existence and of what we know. And if all we know is prosperity and good times, we think that that's normal. We think that that's always the way it's going to be. And if you come along and say, wait a minute, this is all going to collapse, most people will think this, boy, this guy's nuts. He's crazy. What's he talking about? This is the way it's always been and the way it always will be. They will say things like, this time it's different, or what's wrong with you? When you hear that this time it's different, be very worried, because it's never different. We're all human beings, and human beings have been pretty much the same for centuries. Be careful if you hear this time it's different.
So you were about 37 to 39 years old when you did the trip by motorcycle, and I would expect you're were almost 40 years from when the book was written. How unbelievable do you think the current situation would be from 37-year-old Jim's perspective, of the U.S. stock market?
Well, I mean, first of all, throughout history, you pick any year, any decade, things are going to change. They're going to change for the better and for the worse, wherever you are. They always have and they always will. So no matter where you are and when you are, please realize that things will change. Doesn't matter anywhere, things will change. Now, that of course is good for many people because it leads to opportunities. Change is usually good for things. Well, it's not always good, but it's certainly change is opportunity. So, wherever you are, start looking around to see how and when things might change, especially how they might change, and that will probably be an opportunity for you. if you can figure it out. The hard part, of course, is figuring it out. You know, if everybody said this is the way the world is, and that always will be, it won't always will be, but you have to figure that out, and that's the hard part.
You know, Jim, one of the ideas that I really appreciated in the book was the idea of the discipline that it takes to become rich or to become a successful investor. How many people out of 1,000 do you think that really take a challenge like that head on and do the hard work or have the discipline that it takes to achieve that idea of becoming rich or a successful investor?
Well, I mean, it's hard work being successful. I wish it were easy. I wish all we had to do was wake up on Saturday and watch TV and we could be successful. But I have learned anyway, it doesn't work that way. It takes a lot of hard work, research, thinking, and trying to figure out the reality of what's going to change and what's going to happen. Oh my gosh, I wish there was good luck. Oh gosh, Tommy, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could be lucky? I wish that's all it took in life. But I have learned that there's no such thing as luck. You have to make your own way.
Jim, one of the other points that I really appreciated in the book was your explanation of the, let's say, the vision and what it takes to really throw yourself completely at a goal, no matter the obstacles. Is this something that you really found throughout your life? Was the, let's say, the recipe to make you successful in whatever goal it was that you had completely thrown yourself into?
I mean, just I didn't know any different. I didn't know any better, you know. If I wanted something, all I knew was I was going to have to work diligently and focus. Focus is extremely important. If one can focus and concentrate, you're more likely to achieve what you want to than just waiting for luck. I don't know how I learned it from an early age, probably because I grew up in a place where everybody was poor and we didn't have much luck, much success, or much prosperity around us. And people realize you have to work hard if you're going to get something, certainly if you're going to be successful. We didn't have any choice. Everybody was poor.
You mentioned in the book that your top three cities that you had visited that you wanted to live in being either New York, Buenos Aires, or Sydney. So what made you pick Singapore eventually, Jim?
Well, in those days, I had young children and I wanted them to speak Mandarin. I wanted them to speak Chinese because I was of the opinion that China was rising and that China would be an important nation again. I was doing that in New York, but my daughter came home from the park one day crying, saying that everybody laughed at her because they all spoke Spanish. New York, everybody speaks Spanish. And she spoke Chinese, and she thought that there was something wrong with her. Well, I realized that if I was serious about teaching my children Chinese, I was going to have to live in a Chinese-speaking city. So I looked around, tried China, which was very wonderful, but I don't speak Chinese. Then I discovered Singapore. In Singapore, they speak English and Chinese. Bad English, bad Chinese, but
I
at
was going to
least
say
they speak English.
some form of English. I've been there and I remember thinking, God, oh, this is English-ish.
You probably couldn't understand them. They think they're speaking English, yes. But in Singapore, they speak English and they speak Chinese. So here we are. It's an extremely easy place to live, exciting, successful country. Very easy to live here. New York's very exciting and great, but nothing works. In Singapore, everything works.
Jim, one of the other books that you've written was called A Gift to My Children, A Father's Lessons for Life and Investing. What lessons do you think you would want to leave the world with? And do you think they've changed since you took the trips and gained the perspective of your travels around the world?
Well, I guess the most important or a proper lesson is you have to be prepared. You have to do your homework. I repeat, I wish there were good luck. I wish all we had to do was set off around the world and that luck would take care of us. I have learned you have to prepare. You have to be ready for everything. And no matter what you prepare for, something's going to come along and surprise you. So you better be prepared. The more prepared you are, the more luck you will have.
Jim, in the book, you weren't actually the let's say the competent mechanic of the pair of you. Your girlfriend at the time was ended up being the more competent mechanic. Were there any other skills that you maybe wish you had picked up more or been more passionate about through your life, that would have maybe changed the trip or that you found to be valuable in hindsight?
Well, people think that I took that woman because she was a tall, young blonde. Now, listen, tall, young blondes are great. Because she also loved motorcycle mechanics, which is even better, as far if you ask me, because I am not very confident in mechanics, don't have much interest, and thank goodness she did. She loved mechanics and motorcycles. I was just an innocent bystander. So I guess the main, I certainly wish I were more competent and mechanical in life. I wish I had a better aptitude for languages. I have learned that languages are extremely important to everybody. Unfortunately, I'm tone deaf. I wish I were good in languages, but I'm not. So I guess I wish I had been better at mechanics, motorcycle mechanics, and languages. We all have our skills and aptitudes. I haven't found mine yet.
Well, maybe being a professional adventurer and an author was maybe you could check those off.
Well, I certainly like adventure. The wonderful thing about adventure is there's always something new and something is going to happen that you're not prepared for. It can be exciting and fun. Difficult and dangerous, but exciting and fun.
Of course, Jim, you have the, let's say the ability to have as much hindsight or as you do now. Where do you see opportunity now or what really interests you now in your life?
Well, most people do want to a hot tip. Everybody wants a hot tip. They want to figure out how they can get rich this weekend. The main thing I have learned is hot tips will ruin you. Be extremely careful. If you get hot tips, stay away because good luck is going to go to the prepared mind, not to luck. So if you're counting on luck to save you and make you rich, you're going to have problems. Unfortunately, hard work and preparation is usually the best answer. I wish good luck would solve everything. It hasn't worked for me.
Jim, one of my favorite lines from the book was how you actually close it. And you say, if you have a dream, you must try it. You won't get another chance to get it out of your system. I think that's a perfect way to kind of wrap up the book and wrap up this conversation as well, to leave people with, the perspective that you need to chase your dreams, right?
Well, I would repeat that why not try it? If you don't try it, you'll never know. And you may live the rest of your life regretting that you never tried whatever it is. Maybe you wanted to be a baseball player. Well, for goodness sakes, try it. The worst that can happen is you'll fail. But that's not the end of the world, and you will probably learn something from your failures. So whatever your dreams are, especially if they're absurd, Try it, do it, you know, and at least for the rest of your life, you won't regret that I never tried. You know, at least you'll know you tried and failed. That's better than never tried, always regretting that you never tried. So please, 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 especially if they're absurd dreams, please try them.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree anymore. Of course, for anybody that wants to check out the books, the name of the book was Investment Biker and also Adventure Capitalist. Obviously, biker was when he went around the world in a car, adventure capitalist in a car. And of course, all of that stuff and more detailed adventure is available at jimrogers.com. Jim, thank you so much for your time today. Very much
Oh
appreciated.
my gosh, Tom, it's been wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I hope we can do it again sometime.